To the Town of Bolton Board of Selectmen Budget Workshop Number 3, Thursday, January 29th, 2026 at 6 o'clock. Town Hall and via Zoom. First up on the docket is the town clerk. Welcome, Elizabeth. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good. So I see you're going up. Payroll is the typical 3%.
Yes.
And the.
Can you turn her up a little bit?
You do what?
The turn her up, please. Yeah.
Is there a volume on there?
It's not. No, I've never had that problem before.
Can you talk louder, Liz?
Sure. I'm talking through my earbuds, so.
Oh, yeah, just talk a little louder. Move your hair.
Okay. Can you hear me better?
Yes.
Thank you.
And the other contracts is 11% increase.
Yeah, I have two of them that I have the our dog program and also our COT program, which is the our land records indexing, our fee station. And there's also other costs that are in there. There's the microfilming of the images. There's also the e-verification that's part of our land audit that we land record audit that we have to get done every year by the state statute. And I think what else is part of that?
A quick question. How much microfilming do we still do?
Well, I got an estimate from COT, and it's about 3,300 images. And right now, they're going to charge us about 97.5 cents. I don't know how they come up with that, but let's just make it 98 cents an image to microfilm. And then that, once those images are all microfilmed, then they go onto the rolls, and then they go to Atkins, and they get stored there in Iron Mountain. So those are our backups should we have some kind of catastrophic something or another happen. We have those kind of backups on film. If something happens to our vault and, you know, the record gets destroyed, we have a backup. So it's important
to
microfilm
that. And these are
things
that can be stored electronically?
Have you looked into electronic storage?
Well, they are stored electronically.
It is electronic, yeah.
And but you have to understand that the state librarian requires certain parameters for electronic storage, and the microfilming does meet those parameters.
Yeah.
And she's shaking her head. Yes.
It's not the old style stuff, you know. It's they're more updated, but nonetheless, we're required to do that. And again, like I said, if some sort of catastrophic event happened, you know, to the vault or the town hall or to the records that were inside of that, then we have a backup for all of that. Because the records that are in my vault are permanent. We're required to keep
What's the difference between a microfilm and like a PDF for a non-computer person?
I'm sorry?
What's the difference? These are documents that, right? Correct? That we need to keep?
These are all the land record documents that are being microfilmed. We have other records, so vital records as well that are being, but that's not part of this contract that we're discussing.
And the microfilm is a film, or is it a micro? Is it a digital image?
It's a digital image.
So it's stored when it goes to Iron Mountain in a hard drive?
It's not going to be on a hard drive. I want to say they probably put it to some sort of a disk.
Okay. I just can't help but wonder if there's a way to do it in aggregate, that would be a whole systems change for you, but ultimately, you know, 50 terabytes is cheaper than the Iron Mountain storage, I would imagine. And, you know,
well, I call
that's
it
a
Iron
whole other thing, but I'm
just curious. I call it Iron Mountain because, well, actually it is because, and I saw the facility, it's out in, it's in Bristol. A lot of the towns are, you know, Atkins will store all their microfilm up there. They have a secure vault.
Universities use it as well. It's like a standard for
storage. Yeah. And like Jim was saying, the state library, who really is who we answer to for all of this, they're the ones that are approving where we can store this, how we can store it, in what formats we can store it. It's all up to them. It's not really up to us. So
Thank you, Liz.
they make the directive and we have to follow it.
Is there any other questions for Liz? Gwen?
Hi, I don't, well, I'm not very good at raising the little yellow hand. I'll try though. I'll try to get
That's
better at that.
fine. I could see you.
So I have one question for Liz, and then I have one a more of a general question. Liz, I remember a few years ago listening in on the conversation when the Board of Selectmen when I was not on it, adopted the property check system. And I know that that is to alert people if some kind of a fraudulent act has happened on their deed. So, like, you've heard in different parts of the state and the country that people will just come in and pretend that they are a legitimate buyer and they buy somebody's property out from under them. So I'm curious as to if you know how many notifications have been sent out to landowners.
I don't know that number offhand. I do know that it works very quickly. We had somebody that called the office just the other day, and he said that he'd gotten a notification that something was on the land record, because he had registered. That's part of what you have to do. And it was funny because a release had just come through on his prior mortgage. They had just paid it off. So this isn't just for fraud, it's just for anything that hits the land record that, hits the parameters of your name, of however you put it into the system for them to notify you. And it was funny because he called and said, "Oh, I just got some sort of a notification. Can you tell me what went on the land record?" And I said, "Oh yeah, we just recorded your release for your mortgage."
Okay.
So it happened within like seconds, the minute that document got processed through and we, took the money in, which finalizes that transaction. That text or email or whatever, however he decided to get it, just went boom and it went out.
You said you
So
have to register.
those are the kind of things that people are gonna see. As far as like any kind of fraud in this state, it's very hard to do that. They'd manage down, in the southern part of the state to get that done, but that happens more on like a county recording level.
So the reason I asked is because I'm wondering whether the cost to continue to pay for that service is justifiable. What's your opinion on that?
I think it is because people are concerned. We have people calling all the time. How do I know if something's happening on my records? I said, well, you can sign up for the property check and do that. You can come down in the office if you want to, periodically and look. I think they like the ease of just signing up for something and having it go out. And like I said, I know it works because we had it, this one person call and it had just been put through. So it's quick.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
Thank you.
I
That's good
think
to
it
know.
justifies it for
That's
sure.
good to
Yeah.
know. Okay,
Okay.
my more general question is probably directed at Jim. And so I'm as we are going through the budget process, many of these budget requests contain a salary increase request. And it would be good, helpful to me as a reminder, and probably helpful to the rest of the board to know which salaries are have already been negotiated through the union negotiated process and which salaries are not, because then we can understand, if we see a bump up, okay, well, that's already taken care of, that's not even up for discussion because we've negotiated it. So I was wondering if Jim could list, and you don't have to use names of employees, but if you could tell me the titles of the employees who fall under the supervisor, the non-supervisor category, and then the whatever other the other category.
So, are you asking for that now or for at a
Yeah.
later date?
Oh, well, I think now, because as we go through these budget reviews, if there if then we it's just easy to we'll just say, oh, that's not negotiable, that's not negotiable, or that one is negotiable. And then it also leads into the question of if it's a department head, have we taken a look at the department head reviews to understand whether the increase that's requested is justifiable based on your review of the department head. So it's really all of that is tied in to the budget process.
So, the town clerk's office does have at least one individual that is not covered under a union contract. But typically, what department heads are doing is if they are a department head and they are not under a union, then they are putting in whatever percentage increase is in the supervisor's contract for an increase for themselves. So all three of our union contracts, which cover the majority of our employees, are in force through at least next year. And all of them have wage increases tied to them for at least next year, if not for the next 2 years beyond that. There are very few staff that are not covered by a union contract. Those would be the individuals in the selectman's office. It would be the recreation director. We have one full-time assistant building official. The part-time building officials are not covered by a union contract.
Elections.
Elections are not covered by a union contract. There are very, I think that covers most of them.
Okay, and could you tell me who the or what employee titles are of the department heads?
So you've got the department heads that are not covered by a contract.
No, that all of them.
I'll do my best to not forget anybody. I hate being put on the spot like this because I don't want to offend anybody by forgetting them. So you've got the recreation department. Your rec director is considered to be a department head. Your fire marshal is considered to be a department head, who is he is not under a union contract. Your building official is a department head. He is under a union contract. The town clerk is a department head. She is not under a union contract. The tax collector is a department head and not under a union contract. The assessor is a department head and not under a union contract. The librarian is a department head and is covered under a union contract. The senior and social services director is a department head and is covered by a union contract. The finance director is a department head and not covered by a union contract. The highway foreman is considered a supervisor and is under the supervisor's contract. The buildings and grounds supervisor is considered a supervisor and is under the supervisor's contract. Carrie, can you help me? Is there anybody I forgot that you can think of?
Yeah, there's five.
Oh, sorry. And the registrars of voters, we consider them to be department heads, and they are not covered by a union contract. And the fire chief, we consider a department head, he is not under a union contract.
Fire marshal's not any of the above, right?
It's a 1.5 person department, so he technically is a supervisor.
Right.
We typically invite him to our supervisor meetings because he is a department head of that department.
Reese, he's a
We
subcontractor.
generally invite her to supervisors meetings, but she is not a department.
Okay, so thank you. You did a good job there, Jim, remembering.
I tried.
So I based on my notes is maybe one, two, three, four, five, or six people who are whose salaries are not covered under contracts. So when
It's probably closer to 10, but
Oh.
yes. Yeah, because you've got two part-timers and a full-timer in the building in the land use office that are not under a union contract. You've got myself and the other two individuals in the selectman's office that are not under a union contract. You've got two registrars of voters that are not under a contract. You've got the finance director, the town clerk, the assessor, and the tax collector.
Okay, I guess I was looking for asking about department heads that who are not under contracts, because they are the
Okay, so
people.
yeah, that's probably accurate.
Okay, so because those are the people whose requests we have some discretion with, and
That's accurate.
so that's okay. So I'm focusing in. There's maybe five or six. I'm not sure I kept exact notes. So what I think that we've got to do as part of this budget process, this is the time to do it, is we've got to take a look at those reviews of those department heads, to tie our any increase that we may decide on, that we tie that to the reviews.
I
So
agree, and that is, so all of the, I think I've shared with you all of the reviews are, I've already written them. I've been meeting with department heads. Unfortunately, I've had a couple of priorities that were unanticipated with like the Parks and Rec grant and the grant for the playground that I'm working on. So there are things that have kind of jumped in front of that process. So I've met with about a third of the department heads already to do their reviews. And I'm almost done with the Parks and Rec grant. You guys will be hopefully taking an action next Tuesday that will allow me to finally submit that. And I will be working on very hard on the grant for the playground, which is due by February 19th. So I am very hopeful that within the next 2.5 weeks, those department heads that I supervise will all have met with me. And I will have that report generated.
okay, great. Because I really don't think we should take an action on a requested increase until we see those reviews. So,
That's fair.
okay, good. Thank you. Those are all my questions for now. Thank you.
All right, anybody else? Welcome, Bob. How are you? All right, I guess that clears the way.
Thank you, Liz. Thank
All
you, Liz,
right,
for
I'll
the.
sign off if nobody has anything else for me.
No, anybody? It's Senior Social Services and Public Health. Thanks for renewing that book. So, Carrie? Carrie's here to represent our
Yes.
Senior and Social Services. Thank you for coming.
So I did come in with as low of a budget as possible, which it's not really changing any current levels of staffing or services. My concern is whether this will really be sustainable over the long term, without cutting any services eventually, because the majority of the budget really is staffing. Followed by probably what's our most expensive program, of course, is our robust transportation. So those are our biggest expenses. The changes to the staffing, the payroll is, to answer Gwen's question, it's putting in the contractual increase and longevity for myself, which is under the supervisors union. All of my staff are non-union. They are part-time. So it was entered with the assumption that it would be the same amount as the non-supervisors union. So that was basically a placeholder based on the other union contracts. They calculate the amount for transportation, which of course is always variable because we never know exactly film usage, but we have historical data. So a lot of these numbers were based on historical utilization. And I was able to lower in some areas. We really do have a lot of help from the Senior Inc. nonprofit group for that, really offsets the supply item quite a bit. That does make a tremendous difference. I spoke with my staff about what we do well, what we're struggling with. We really have had a strong level of participation, a lot of consistency across most programs. We've been attracting new participants, drawing from the local area. As a whole, we're going into our TAF program now. Things like that that are very well attended. We're offering more tax appointments than ever this year, things like that. We've done a lot with the holiday program, a lot of the social services. This fall was very busy. There were a lot of changes to Medicare. For the first time ever, we had the new name for Operation Fuel is Generation Power CT. I was able to do that in-house this year for the first time. That was great. We've done a lot of great programs. I know in his presentation, Bill spoke about the Knox Box program, which we're very proud of. Our fire prevention posters this year were fantastic. You know, so I think there's a lot to be very proud of that we're able to offer at very low or no cost that are very community oriented. What we're really struggling with is we really do need more van drivers. We really don't have a good backup in place. Getting CDL drivers is very difficult. As you know, this year we were really inundated with our food pantry. That was really a strain on staffing and storage, storage issues and space issues we run into with our programs. You know, we'd like to offer more programs, and sometimes that's a little bit of a barrier. We didn't get to do as much outside this year, of course, with all the construction. Hopefully this year we'll be able to incorporate that more. So I think looking forward, you know, I go, how do we continue to offer that level of staffing and services with that level of staffing? Because sometimes it can be hard to cover, you know, when there's a lot of things going on at once, making sure we have at least one staff member in the building at all times, that kind of thing. So what I brought to you today is not lowering anything. We did consider other revenue sources, and one we thought was to charge a little bit more at the luncheons, again, to offset the cost of food being what it is. Otherwise, it was pretty minor changes, the same level of professional developments. We know our repair costs and inspection costs and things like that for the vehicles are what they are. We have no way to get around that. So it was really trying to keep things at a pretty basic level.
If you were to find another driver, would that increase your payroll, or is that kind of covered?
It possibly could. I mean, we always base it on a projected number of hours per week.
Yeah, so
we are sometimes having to deny rides if we don't have a driver available. Sometimes we have multiple drivers at the same time.
Right.
The biggest concern, especially with right now, we have one CDL driver and one who isn't, is any of the trips.
Yeah.
If we don't have a backup, if we don't have that driver available that day, we may be in a bit of a pickle. So that's a real big concern to have that, or having to, you know, schedule the you know, like, for example, we have some programs already planned for the summer. We have to account for vacation schedules, things like that, already months in advance because we're committing to different programs. So I think that those are very popular programs. So it's really hard not having that backup, or if someone's needing a medical transport at the same time, you know, really trying to juggle that. We do cover a pretty expansive area because of the location of all the medical facilities around here. To make it's a little bit of a logistical nightmare, for sure.
Do you have to resort to outsourcing the bus trip to another bus company?
We had to do that once because there was a medical reason that day, which is, we had looked into that last year to see, is this, you know, any cheaper of a prospect, and it isn't. It's way more expensive. They were very, M&J Bus helped us out that day. They were fantastic, but it's definitely not cheaper.
Okay.
So it's much better to have our own, both for cost and flexibility, et cetera.
So all these programs you have, none of them, you don't charge for any of them unless it's for the Christmas brunch or something. But generally speaking, it's all covered here. Correct.
Most of the programs are covered. If we charge anything, it's generally how much whoever the particular person is charging us.
Right. Entrance fees.
Right. Exactly. You know, like if it's trips, et cetera, is all, we get a group rate that's, we're charging exactly what the price is.
And that those funds are not reflected in here anywhere, right? They go to
the miscellaneous revenue.
They go to the, okay. So do you know what that would be for a number? Is it 1,000, 5,000, 10,000?
There is a line item in there for basically if we charge like a van fee for
Yeah.
something, that kind of thing, that goes into the general fund. I
We'll
believe Jill has it listed as senior donations, and it's generally, I think, listed at about 1,000 for the year, give or take. Our only other revenue is the DOT grant, which has been a stable amount every year.
in the tune of
So 11,000.
yeah, I was
here.
Somewhere around 10,000.
11,800. That's in here.
Which is currently paid in twice a year increments. We just got the second
Yeah.
installments.
Any other questions? I didn't mean to be asking questions, but Bob, when?
Carrie, I was just curious, do you have any sense of how we compare to sister towns
For total budget,
for, yeah, for,
total budget for the senior and social services.
yeah.
I'm not sure about total budget. That's a really good question.
I can't think of another town that has senior and social services combined and is about the same size.
Right. It's pretty rare to have it combined.
So they would have two different budgets.
Correct.
Well, we can always add those together if we can find
Right.
Thank you.
A quick question I did have, looking at your for your payroll unaudited actual expenditures compared to this year's request. I guess my question too, with that almost $20,000 lesser amount, was there like a significant amount of I assume that that delta, besides your increase, would be van drivers. Is that
There's
safe to?
also there's a program coordinator and an administrative assistant
Were
for the
they on
office.
hire during that time, or was that
They,
$20,000 is all of your increases combined?
my sister, I don't know why it would be 20,000. I mean, that's
It's 19.
right, adding the 5,000 value change
I
that
feel
you're.
like maybe in the back of, did we have discussions about rates for drivers and part-time employees last year?
We
Has that
did last
increased?
year. It was increased. I think, my staff in general is lower than other similar clerical positions in town. They are on the low end for sure. That was an increase last year. I to the response to your question, there was a period of time last year where we did have significantly lower use of van drivers because of, at the time, we had some medical issues with the van drivers we had at that time. And also there were some vehicle repairs that, fortunately, at one point last year, both the 10 and 20 passenger vans had significant vehicle repairs. So we did have a period of time where we weren't able to cover our normal transportation. That wouldn't be the full 20,000 of our, we were fully staffed the entire year otherwise.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Hi, yes, this is the recording clerk. I was wondering, for point of clarity, if Terry could spell her first and last name, please.
Carrie, Carrie Conopelli, Conceltelli.
Thank you.
So Carrie has the two budgets, right?
To the public health.
So the next one is the public health. I don't know if you guys saw that one yet. Do
I have a
you
look
have
at it.
any
Yes, thank
questions?
you. You haven't gotten an email from Rob about changes for next year yet, right?
No, that we have not been told
But
in.
they are anticipating an increase, which is not reflected in this budget because we do not have the numbers from the Eastern Highlands Health District as of yet.
And is there, what is in this
It's
other
a
contract?
so this is the value for Eastern Highlands Health District, which is a health district that we belong to that provides our health services through them, and that includes our sanitarian, the health director, which is required by statute, and they provide They work with Cary to provide vaccination clinics. They've also done vaccination clinics at the library and some other pop-up events in town. Thank you. We are one of, I think, six towns or seven towns that belong to that.
So does this number represent the aggregation of all of those services, or is this
Yes.
just a flat fee?
It's a per the fee is per capita.
Okay, got it. So it's annual dues,
And
essentially.
based on the budget discussions I've been a part of at the Eastern Highlands Health District, there is an anticipated increase, but I don't think it's been adopted yet.
You guys remember the years when there wasn't increases every year, I think? And
No.
we're afraid to increase. Well, remember that. Minimum wage is helping out on these increases too. But if you were making, anyways, we won't get into that.
So I
Thanks,
mean,
Jared.
I would say that, this provides a critical service, and we could not do it cheaper in-house than we're doing it as a member of the health
No
district.
doubt.
So it's like $60 a person then? Is that kind of the ballpark per capita fee if we're...
No, it's not that high. Because it's every person in town, which is around 5,000. It's we're just shy of
So
$5,000.
$6 a person.
$6 a
Yeah,
person. All right.
that sounds much closer.
Yeah.
Concerned I was going to round to zero, depending on the finance committee.
Any
Thank you,
other
Kurt.
questions for Carrie on the health? All right. Thank you very much,
Thank you,
Carrie.
Kerry.
Thank you,
We
Carrie.
appreciate it. And now we're into the finance committee.
Excuse me. This is Ross Lally's chair of board of Charity Finance Committee speaking. Question, we're going to do the auditing budget too, because I didn't see that called out specifically, but it is, we do hire the auditor.
I don't know if we included that in this.
I don't think we included it in the
I don't
package.
think we included that in the package, Ross. Sorry, we tried to get you all done in one night. I apologize.
So this is a special meeting then, so we can't cover that. I
That's
just want to
correct.
clarify.
It is a special meeting, yes.
Okay.
So we move on.
Do we need to start a timer?
We'll move on to elections.
No, we'll do
No,
the
Finance
do the
Committee.
finance the
Oh,
first. We just can't do the auditing.
oh, okay.
No, that's I just was asking for clarification on it. So let's go on to the finance
They have their
committee.
own budget. Yeah, auditing.
Yes.
It's small. Oh, sorry. I think you're talking about finance, not
Right.
auditing.
Anyway,
Go
we have
ahead.
two members of the finance committee sitting up here on stage as well, so you guys can help keep me honest with this. Everything is staying the same as last year, except for advertising. So you'll notice that we just moved money back and forth between payroll and official slash admin services. They both go to pretty much go to pay for our board clerk. And it's just a matter of, is the board clerk possibly going to be on staff, or is the board clerk going to be somebody who's a contractor? So we just split the money between the two, the two different line items. But it's the same amount as we asked for, previously. The advertising budget, we did ask for an increase of $1,800. And the reason for that is we have heard very loudly and clearly from the public that we need to do a better job of, communicating what the finance committee is doing, what our budget is developing, and how we present it. And so that's what we put the monies in there for, is for that purpose, the additional funding.
And what does the $1,800 buy?
Advise, we have not figured it out yet. We just put that in as a placeholder to go through and see what we are going to do.
Lot of room to figure out how to use it and make communication
The
happen.
reason for doing it is
Yeah.
simply because we can talk about it at our meetings, figuring it out by the end of this fiscal year. And if it needs to be cut, we can do so before the end of the fiscal year, the request, for next year. So it's better to put in a placeholder and whittle it down if we don't need it than it is to come back and say, oops, we didn't ask for something we needed. So that's purely it. We talked about a bunch of numbers, and Rodney and David, keep me honest with that.
Look.
That was basically the thought that went in.
Any other questions for Ross on the Finance Committee budget? Bob, you're good. Thank you.
Yep.
One's good. Okay. So let's move on to the elections.
And did Ms. Kirog join on the
Do not see her. I do not see her.
She and I discussed the budget, but I think she thought that we were up for discussion next week. But we did actually talk about it yesterday, and we're good as far as what we have presented. So I can go over that. And the majority of our increase comes from the fact that this is election year. And we're anticipating doing like six referenda based on last year. We typically would put in four referenda as our budget reflects. They run about, you know, between $5,000 and $6,000 each. This year we're going to be short. And we're, you know, with the because we budgeted for four, we had two, we got $6,000 in from the state, but that's not guaranteed that we'll get it next year. That was money for early voting. And so that offset one of the referenda that we had in 2025, but we can't really guarantee we're going to have that funding again from the state. They don't seem very interested in paying for early voting on an indefinite basis.
So question, yes, you said sir. You budgeted for six referenda. The note on one of these pages, they're not sequentially numbered, so it's hard to tell. But it's note four. You budgeted for referenda, but three are for 26, 27, and three are for 27, 28. My question is, why are we budgeting for 27, 28 already?
Because the fiscal year covers both election years. See, because you're going to do three.
Not till July. Doesn't start till July.
The right. Fiscal year starts in July. There's a possibility we might continue the referenda for this budget in July.
Okay.
And then you go over into next year, we start talking about the following year's budget. And those first set of referenda are in next year's.
Sure. In the spring. Then could we get a table that lists out, hey, if we are able to get the referenda done and we don't need those three for the 26, 27 year? Yeah, okay.
It's not in the small document, that summary document that just lists what the costs are. It submits separately a Excel spreadsheet that documents everything.
Some of these got scanned off a little bit.
Yeah, some of these are cut off, so I'm not sure that we're going to have all of that information.
Well, I can certainly give it to you again. I can send it in, and that's if they don't chop it off, but I did include everything, you know, in a document.
Okay. I should
probably
understood.
Send you the PDF probably so that you can look to print it as a PDF.
That's probably helpful because then you can't screw up.
Or I have the whole Excel spreadsheet if you want to play.
Yeah, like,
make sure my numbers are good. I can resend it, but I did submit it all specifically. Okay. So basically, you guys can, you know, if you want to take a chance with it, that's up to you. Again, it comes down to each one of them runs about $5,000 to $6,000. So there's six of them. That's about $30,000 to $6,000. And if you want to cut out a couple, that is your prerogative. But then the money's got to come from someplace if we have them.
Well, I don't necessarily want to cut it out. I want to be able to say, like, hey, if we go into the first budget cycles and we only need X amount, and then we need to change where the budget is. Hey, okay, all of a sudden now for red travelers, we need this amount, which means we need to move money from elsewhere. That way we can kind of plan for you know, what amount we actually need for the registrar of voters, knowing, okay, if we pass on the first try this year, then
they're all itemized. They're all itemized in the other document
okay.
that I provided. Okay. I have one thing that spells out the election cycle for the whole year and the total cost of each election, food payroll, buying the ballots, feeding the poll workers, all of that stuff, it's itemized.
Perfect.
So you can just go across the bottom of it. Here's the first referendum. It costs all this much.
I saw the second part of that. So it says four, five, and six, but we don't have the front of it.
I can send the full spreadsheet to Kathy and ask that she send it to the Board of Selectmen intact.
I would PDF it in the whatever way that you want to see the tables, just so that'll help printing out.
Yeah.
But appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I will do that because I know these questions come up and it's hard to figure out how do you do your, you know, your trading, you know, risk,
yeah, exactly.
You know, risk analysis and trade-offs without that. So that's why it's provided. Sorry you guys didn't get
it. You threw us our maximum
The budget number that we put in is the maximum.
Right.
So and we that also, maximum assumes six
yep,
referenda
yep.
during the course of the next fiscal year, three at the beginning of it for
yep, for
the
this
current
year,
year
for this
and
budget.
then three for the next year. And then the other thing it includes is this is a state election year, and that means there's a potential for primaries. So the primaries would be in August. And the Dems and the Republicans both currently look like they're going to have, you know, primaries. And if they do, that's the potential for four different ballots, because you might have two different, you'll have Democratic primary in District 1 and Democratic primary in District 2. There you go, like $6,000 to $8,000 for those. They're a little more expensive than the general, than the referenda. And then you wind up with, if the Republicans do the same thing, then you wind up with, you've got the possibility of you're effectively for the primary running four different elections simultaneously. Two Republican and Democratic primaries in District 1, and the same thing going on in District 2. So they have to be each staffed separately. And so it's expensive doing that. And then because of that, you also wind up with the risk of recounts. And with as many referenda we do, there's a possibility of doing recounts for those.
You carry almost $13,000 for a recount. Is that one recount?
Recounts are expensive, yes. We're assuming that it happens with a primary and that can be more expensive.
Same thing with the audit?
Yep. We're assuming you may have more than one race to audit because of the primaries.
Right.
Normally, we just put in, we put in for one, like last year, we put in for one audit and one recount.
Yep.
And re-canvass, as the state calls it. And we didn't need either of them, but those monies then go towards the extra referenda that we had.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But the more elections you have, like the more referenda, and the more, like, general elections too, the more likely we're going to get have to do a recount if they're close. And then again, it's the same thing, as it's, they can get expensive, and I don't know if you want to go scrambling looking for that, you know, that chunk of change at the last minute and finding where you transfer it from. So it's like, it's, you know, your call on it, but
my call is, let's have a do a budget every 2 years instead of one.
Yeah, but you know, it's the same thing. In the fall, we'll have two districts instead of one. Last year we were able to, because the actual ballot was the same in both districts, to just do it in one place. You cut the staffing in half.
Mm-hmm.
We won't have that option
right
this fall. We'll have to do one over at Bolton Center School, the other one over at the high school. So that doubles, you know, it doubles the cost, plus you then have the early voting.
Is it necessary to have two districts? Like, we couldn't handle it all on spot. It's
the state law.
Right?
It doesn't make sense. I asked that question to the Secretary of State's lawyers. They said, you know, yes, you have to. And then somebody else challenged me, and the Secretary of State got up and said, time out, guys. It's the law. You don't argue. You talk to your legislators about it and get it changed. But it's just the state.
Well, it's just the way it's been forever, or it's per capita thing, or
no, it's in statute that if the ballots are different in each district, you have to do them in different locations within the district if there was a place within that district to hold the election.
That's when they decided to redistrict us.
Yeah, we were two districts.
What, 2 years ago?
Yeah. We were two districts in the past before I became registrar. Then it went to one, and now it's back to two.
Wow. And before that, it was that one when I was
Everything
is not three.
Yeah. When I first started, it was one. And we went to two.
Theoretically, if you had a gymnasium that you could split in half, could that be considered two polling places?
You could consider it two polling places, but you would still, if you didn't have another, so let's say that for whatever reason, we couldn't use Bolton Senior High School, and we had to do it in Bolton Center School. I'd have to get approval from the Secretary of State explaining the emergency for that, and why you wouldn't be using St. Morris. And because that's over in District 2. And then because let's say it's a primary, I'd still have to fit four elections into there because you'd have to do the one, you know, two for District 1, two for District 2. And if it's a general election, we'd still need to split it up and you'd still have the double staff.
And the reason, and you and I have had this discussion.
Yeah. I don't mind talking about it again.
But I'm asking it publicly so that people, anybody who's interested may...
No, that's a good thing to
do. May listen.
No, it's a lot of this stuff, people wonder, why do we sometimes do it over here, sometimes over there? And it's really because we're trying to be effective with the monies we have. And when we can combine it into one place, we will, because it cuts the cost down. And for the primaries, we do not duplicate everybody, because we can have... one assistant registrar for the Democrats and one for the Republicans. So we don't have to double up on those and have four. We can just keep the two that we usually would do. And you can have, technically, you can have one moderator to keep an eye on both of them in one place. So there is some savings. Not everything is double, but for all practical purposes, it is.
Food for thought. It seems to me there's four science rooms in the high school that each have an entrance door from the hallway and an exit door out to the courtyard. Could each of those be served as a different polling location?
If you could prove that you did not have any place in the other district that was available and met the requirements, and we have a whole grid that I can go through with you if you would like that shows the criteria for accessibility and security that we have to meet. And just another thing, Jim and I
tried.
Yeah, and he shared that document with me and with the board in the past.
I can also dig it out, send it over again if you guys are interested. But there's a whole grid with 10 different criteria regarding security, accessibility, is it air conditioned, all that stuff, which is part of why we had to change location last year, the last referendum, because it just was too darn hot over at St. Moore's and there was nothing we could do. It's 90 degrees and more in there all day.
Are there any buildings that are on the line between the two districts, that half of the buildings in District 1, half of the buildings in District 2?
The gazebo.
Yeah. No, the buildings that we have over there, Herrick Park can do in a pinch. It's not ideal from an accessibility perspective. And then St. Morris is good, except for the AC, if you have to continue the referendum in the summer. So that leaves the schools. And they only can be used when we arrange with them in advance when the, you know, like election day.
Right.
So that they have a teacher's workshop or something on that day. And then there's no students coming in and out. So there's no security issues. And then there's also no dealing with the buses going in and out. And the other little quirk you have to deal with is if you have a primary for a general election, you have to have the primary in the same location by statute as the general election. So that's going to be part of what I'm doing this summer for when we're going to come back to you folks again for approval of where our voting locations will be and, you know, where and when. And I'm getting all the approvals in the background right now. I already got St. Morris lined up and I'm working on the schools next. But, let's say the general election is going to be in Bolton Center School and Bolton High School in the fall, then I have to make sure that when we do the primaries in August, they're in the same locations, Bolton Center School and Bolton High School.
So, I'm just thinking out loud, and maybe this isn't the time to have that conversation, but there's no air conditioning in BCS gymnasium.
No, it's been hot in there too sometimes when we've used it. It's not been that hot because typically
they don't have the glass.
It's a
they don't
thicker
have the glass,
closet.
So it's not that bad. They got the high ceiling, so a lot of the heat goes up, and you can put the big fans in because we've done some of the
but it works.
We've done the referendum there. We can make that work, but also I don't think we've gone to August in there when I've been.
Right, that's my concern for you.
Yeah. So I'll just tell you guys now. We'll come back with the whole schedule. What we're looking to do is start at St. Morris. Try to get in four referenda between May and the end of June. Hopefully that does it. And if not, high school, the common room, like we, you know, did for the general election last fall, the municipal election last fall.
So is there any thoughts, any questions, any discussion?
Ross,
yes, sir.
Early voting just happens for every election now. Mm-hmm. In perpetuity.
It's in perpetuity by statute. Yeah. For the primary, we have to have 4 days of it. Actually, I'm sorry. Let's see. Let me just be sure.
So we have no savings.
Yeah, hold on. Let me just go work before I go into
that. That is a big increase when the
presidential preference primary is 4 days. Let me go look at election expenses.
You know, but the early voting is all done.
Normal hour.
Well, it's weird hours, but the staffing for it is not same as a voting.
Right.
I don't believe.
Yeah, it says early voting for the primary is 7 days with 6 8-hour days and 1 12-hour days. And then we allow 2 hours typically for setup and takedown. We have to get in beforehand, get things set up, and then take it all down at the end of the day, reconcile records. And for the
$2,000.
And there's only four staff member on that?
Yeah. Right now, depends on how many people come in. I went and put in here municipal primary, but it actually should be the state primary in the general election.
Right.
I didn't change it. I should have, but it doesn't change the number of hours and days. So for, yeah, so it's 7 days early voting for the primaries for the state, and then you'll have 14 days of early voting for the general election, the state election, and in November.
Yeah.
And those are the same thing. They're 12 8-hour days, and then there's 2 12-hour days. And again, it's the same thing with 2 hour setup and takedown. And Sandy and I went through and we spread all the hours out that we put in between office hours, and this is turning into like 2 days a week, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, too, is it's the first time we actually have four people in the office. We've always had some money to give back in the past because we haven't done an audit, we haven't done a recount, and we've budgeted for four people, but we've only had two, pretty much. It's like Bernice and me, you know, while Sandy was out, then it was Sandy and me while Bernice was out.
Right.
And now at least we have Susan Pike. I brought in as an assistant registrar to see if she likes it. Bernice is basically not working.
Right.
And then Sandy has Mary Terhune.
Yeah.
For the Democratic deputy registrar. So we finally got four people in there.
At the end of last budget season, yeah, we started having some conversations between the Board of Selectmen and the Registrars of Voters about reducing hours. So
that would be something I would present when Sandy and I come with the proposed, but you know, schedule of elections. That for the referendum, this by state statute and town ordinance, the selectmen, are empowered to reduce the voting hours for referenda.
And if the Board of Selectmen chooses to do that with the recommendation of the Registrars of Voters, is that impact shown in this budget?
No.
So it's not. So is that making that decision could reduce this budget. So
yeah, it would just reduce it for the referendum or cut it down.
Well, it's 4 hours. It would be 12 to 8 instead of 6.
Yeah, you come in earlier.
Right.
Again, an hour before and an hour after. So it's basically 6 hours instead of 12.
Right.
Then there's some fixed costs, like the ballots don't change and defeating the poll workers.
I think it was 30% of the votes came in within those hours that we're talking about reducing. But the early voting is still there, right?
Yeah, it's the only thing it would do would save you on the referenda. So let's say you take a third of, you'd save 10 to 15,000 possibly on the year. That's my opinion, just calculating it roughly now if we went to reduce the schedule.
I think what would be ideal here is if they're coming to do the schedule anyway, having updated information on that, but that doesn't necessarily need to be available for the first referenda. That would be something that we could use as like a way to reduce or a way to, you know, really look at how we're going to be economical about.
So you're saying use the regular schedule for the first one?
Use this for the first one.
And then reduce it for the second.
That way, if they're not in a rush to get the information to us, we can use that information for a future one.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, I got to talk. I can talk to Sandy about it. I'll take this info back. Sandy and I can sit down. I'll send you the first thing I do is I'll send you this spreadsheet that I'm looking at here.
Thank you, Sam.
So you can see what I gave you for starters. And the other thing I will do is talk to Sandy about it and say, here's the potential that we could figure out if you come in with, we come up with the reduced hours for the referenda. And we do want to sit down with the selectmen sometime in February so we can get the schedule all ironed out, post it so people know where things are going to happen and when.
Right.
And put it up, you know, we can put it out in the Bolton Bulletin, and I want to put it up on the registrar site and just get the message out so we don't have the confusion that we did last year, particularly with the referenda having to change at the last minute. I just want to have it as a, you know, as a plan we all would, you know, agree to.
Sandy has said for the poll sergeant. For the municipal as well, I had heard frustration from a good number of people that they didn't know where they were voting and they were surprised to be at the high school.
And that's it. And again, that's something we need to figure out basically some more about the publicity, where we're going to put up signs and so forth, and just get that all squared away in advance as to who is doing
That's what that $1,800 is for.
No, there's $1,000 for advertising in this budget.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
No, it's a different budget. That is part of what the 1800 for the finance was, you know, meant to be for. It's part of that, like, put out.
There's
like
a little cross.
We do have a little bit of advertising monies in the budget for here as well.
Or was any expended last year?
Some of it goes towards the, you know, posting official notices and stuff that we have to do. So you have to. So another crazy thing the state does is you have to post it in the newspaper that's generally read in the area. There are no newspapers anymore. So we put it in the Hartford Current because the JI is no longer here.
So
it's just a lot of stuff that you just do because the state says to.
So the town clerk, Liz, carried legal notices. Hers are different than yours.
Well, she usually does the legal notice for the referendum.
Right. So those are in here already. Yours are for the actual elections?
Yes. And we have sometimes, this is again some quirks of the law. Sometimes you can do stuff that covers both of us, and sometimes we have to do it each separately, even though it's the same election.
So she has to put it out and you have to put it
sometimes.
Out. Yeah.
Not always.
Yeah.
And it has to go out there on the board.
Yep.
We should keep track when that happens, so that we can show how much the budget actually gets used for.
Yeah.
Multiple.
Right. That's not where our savings are.
No. It does come up. You can look at the actual budget sheets that Jill puts together, because each one of these line items equates to line item that we take money out of. So typically, I'm pretty sure we don't use the full $1,000. That I think we have in there.
So our option tonight. Did you have any questions, Gwen or Bob?
No.
Our option tonight is to say let's take a gamble and chop some out. And there's only going to be tonight, right? Four referendums.
No, I mean, you're going to be having budget deliberations, right.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to want to see all of this in a master spreadsheet.
Yeah, I'd like to have the whole sheet
that Jill puts together, so you can see where you stand before you start.
Yeah,
making decisions. And I think and we can make changes, if the elections budget comes back to us and the ROB has a great conversation with the Board of Selectmen and they agree to make some changes to the hours. Reality is we can make changes to this budget right up probably through the first week of March.
And it's the way I have the spreadsheet up, it's easy enough to do because it's all broken out by expense category. So it's very easy to do. One of the things we did put in was for a 3% increase. I don't know if you noticed that.
It's clearly in here.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that we put that in there because I think in the future you guys are going to have trouble finding people to do a part-time job that has this responsibility for pay that's less than the janitor gets.
You won't be around forever?
No. Either doing this job or alive. I don't know which will come first. It just depends how stressful it gets, but we'll
find out. I wasn't trying to be morbid here, Ross.
Well, I am 72, so we shall see.
You don't look a day over 50.
How old do I look?
If you want. I got this.
I'm just going to figure out what you want at the next meeting, but whatever. No, seriously, anyway. If you guys have any questions, you know, let us know. And I'll get you that spreadsheet. And then I will also get together with Sandy. We'll ask for some time with you folks to talk through this, some more detail around the scheduling and stuff. And then that can also inform, you know, what cuts, if any, we can make before we get to the first presentation of the budget to the public.
Thank you, Ross.
So with that being said, nobody has any questions or comments?
Be back again to talk about the auditor's budget.
I'm sorry. I really tried to get you all done one night, and I apologize.
Well, that'll be a very good conversation.
It should be, yeah. And we'll put you on first.
Thank you.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay.
that was a promise.
Is it really a discussion about it, or does it just fall into
it's
never
just
seen
another
it.
Fee? Like you
it's
know.
Just another fee, yeah, right?
There to answer any questions.
It kind of is what it is, and there's not much you can do.
Oh, yeah, I'm just saying maybe when he brings his schedule and so forth, we can formally do it then. But just
yeah,
we could
do it when you come to have the discussion.
Yeah, as long as you just put it on the agenda.
We'll just put it on the agenda.
Probably be a special meeting or something like that. So
well, we don't have many special meetings, but you know, I know that you reached out to Kathy today, so we'll figure out with you guys what works for you based on a date that the Board of Selectmen are meeting, and we'll get you on the agenda.
Yep. I don't think it'll be again. It's just like as long as we all agree one way or the other, that's more important.
Right. Yep.
You know, because I just think you just think better that way.
I agree.
Everybody's gonna cry.
What?
Oh, thank you.
Is there a finance?
Thank you.
I did that.
Is there a finance meeting now?
Are we going to adjourn?
I don't think we need to, right?
This isn't an adjournable meeting. Yeah, just for, yeah. But it says thank you all for coming.
So just for the record,
thank you.
Tim left at 6:55.
Tim left at 6:55, and it is now 7:02.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, Quinn. Good night, bye.